So we'll start the session. We're only about a half hour late, but that's all good. is supper at 5:15? Is that? And that's the next thing on the. Well, my name is Matt Showalter. I am the dean of students here at RBC. Have been for the last, I don't know, 8 years maybe. I just got back from, I had a 6-month sabbatical. So I worked here long enough to get a sabbatical. And so I'm just coming back from that right now. This week was the first week back on the job. Prior to coming here to RBC, I was, my wife and I served a number of terms in Turkey with Rosedale in a church planting role, southeastern part of the country, and then we moved back from there to Sarasota, Florida, where we were involved in youth ministry for about, 7-8 years, something like that, at a church in Florida. And then from there, we moved up here to Rosedale. So I've kind of been around in terms of various types of ministry, various types of things. I grew up in Turkey as a missionary kid, so I've sort of been back. When we've stayed in touch, sort of what's going on there, I get back every once in a while to do some teaching in Turkey. I speak Turkish, so I often kind of get asked to go back and do different teachings and stuff like that. Just in February, I was back to speak at a youth seminar that they were doing, and so it's fun to kind of stay connected and go back. And it's not hard to sort of jump between worlds for me. I've kind of been doing it my whole life. So that's a little bit about myself. The title, or what I'm supposed to be, the topic that I'm supposed to be talking to you about is the life of the mind, which is an extremely daunting topic. When Steve emailed me, I was like, really? Yeah, I have a mind, but I don't consider myself a kind of an academic or a strongly sort of cognitive-oriented person. I was like, what's going on? I've been to school. I've got a number of degrees and things like that. But he was, Steve's request was to say, you guys are going to be doing a lot of reading and different things like that, and just some help in terms of learning some basics on sort of study and discipline and some things like that to get through the different asks that you're going to have through the course of this program. But still, it was a little bit, it was an interesting, let me just read. So I flip-flop back and forth in terms of, let's start off with a quote. This guy, he's a professor of physics at New York University. Let's see if you can make head or tail of what he's saying here. This is an academic paper that he wrote. He said that there exists an external world whose properties are independent of any individual human being, and indeed of humanity as a whole, that these properties are encoded in eternal physical laws, and the human being can obtain reliable, albeit imperfect, and tentative knowledge of these laws by hewing the objective procedures and epistemological strictures prescribed by the so-called scientific method. He goes on to say that the feminist and post-constructualist critiques have demystified the substantive content of mainstream Western scientific practice, revealing the ideology of domination concealed behind the facade of objectivity. It has thus become increasingly apparent that physical reality, no less than social reality, is at bottom a social and linguistic construct. Do any of you understand anything that he just said? A little bit. There's words. They're all.
I'm just not connecting any ideas between all of those sentences.
No, this is not Turkish. This is not Turkish. This is English, as far as I know. But actually, this whole paper that he wrote has come to be known as the so-called hoax, because he submitted this whole paper as a as a kind of a hoax to an academic journal to see if he could get it published. And just put a whole bunch of words together and ideas together and used a bunch of stuff and submitted it and got it published. And I mean, it's absolutely crazy. But when you read it, it's like, he's really good at putting words together. But what is he actually saying? I don't know. And apparently he didn't know either, but that was his point. But this whole so-called hoax, as it's kind of become infamous for, has become this means by which people sort of like to throw stones at academia. Look, you guys publish academic articles and whatnot, and who knows what they even mean? You guys don't even know what they mean, and you know, kind of this. It's easy to get this sort of anti-education. Oh, they're just heads in the clouds, don't know what they're talking about. You know, type of people. And you know, when it comes to the Christian life, and when it comes to like Christian scholarship or something like that, it's easy to you kind of find yourself. At least I find myself swinging between various extremes. You've got different stories in some of my favorite. Well, one of my favorite, I don't know how many times I've used this in a sermon, is the story of Jesus when he heals the, do you remember the time, it's in John, I believe John chapter 9, when Jesus heals the blind man. It's where he spits on the ground and makes mud with his saliva and wipes it. And then the guy, you remember the story, he goes, Jesus says, well, go and wash and then you'll be healed. And so the guy goes and he washes and he can see. But then we get this long narrative in John of sort of the disciple of the Pharisees kind of beginning to like, okay, so what happened here and why do you know, sort of they get all sort of FBI on the guy, like, what happened? Was it really, were you really healed? Do you really not see? You know, and it's kind of, and they bring, and you feel sorry for the guy because he never actually even saw Jesus, if you think about it. Like, all he knows is some guy came up and spit and made mud and put it on his eyes, and then he washed, and he doesn't even know what happened. He doesn't know anything. And yet the Pharisees keep calling him in and saying, well, who, Jesus is a sinner, you know that. And he's like, and he has this great line in John chapter 9 where he says, you know what, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know, but one thing I know, I used to be blind, but now I can see. It's like, that's his testimony. That's a great testimony, if you think about it. Like, we don't need to know a lot. We don't need to know much, but we do know that, you know what, there's a certain number of things that we didn't used to understand, and spiritually we were blind, and we were dead, and to our, you know, but now, because of Christ and his work alive in us, we can see. So that's a great, you know, kind of a great testimony, if you will, by someone who doesn't know anything, but is still testifying to the power of Jesus. So, it's a great story, but it can also then sort of easily lead you down a road, so it doesn't really matter what you know. It doesn't really matter that you know anything. Just, you know, once you were blind, now you can see, that's all you need to know. Or there's the story also in Acts, I think it's Acts chapter 4, when the disciples I think it's Peter and John who go into the temple, and there's the guy at the gate who's begging, and he's healed, and he goes into the temple. But then again, the Sanhedrin comes after them and asks them a bunch of questions, and they testify boldly to what Jesus had done in their lives. And there's a cool verse there in chapter 4 of Acts where it says they noted that. I might have to look at my notes for a while. I'll just paraphrase. They realized these were just uneducated fishermen, and they took note that they had been with Jesus. And so, you know, I've heard people sort of preach on this before, and it kind of, and the point is, you know what, they were just uneducated, they didn't really know anything, but what was important is that they had been with Jesus. Is that a true statement or not? It is. I mean, it is a true statement. Like, I don't want to belittle that idea. It's very true. So what? In light of those two stories, and you know, this I think sometimes in Christian circles we can sort of go down this route of, oh, the mind, don't worry about what you know or what you think. It's just, it's important. Your heart is important. And you connect with Jesus in your heart, you know, and kind of what happens up here is not as important. The heart is what's important. Well, I think, you know, as both of those stories that we talked about illustrate, I think there is a lot of truth in the fact that we don't need to know a lot, or that we don't, you know, to testify about Jesus. But in no way, shape, or form does the Bible also go to the extent that I've heard people go as well in sort of diminishing the importance of thoughtfulness, diminishing the importance of thinking about issues, thinking about things, reading some books, you know, thinking deeply about issues, not just sort of going through life without any sort of careful contemplation. In fact, you know, you don't have to go far. For example, one of my favorite verses is Philippians 2, 5 through 8, which says, "Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God as a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross." This is a call for us to have the same mind as Christ. I think there's a lot of people, and maybe even if I would write something like this, I would say, you know, have the same. I want to. You know, I've prayed this before. I want the heart of Jesus, and that's not a wrong thing to pray for. I want the heart of Jesus too, and there's a part of me that would think that in Philippians, Paul would say, "Well, I want the same heart in you that was in Christ. That, you know, he laid himself down and he took on the form of a servant. He humbled himself." But he doesn't say that. He says, have this same mind. Have this mind. It's important what you think. It's important what, in so much of what we do, flows from what we think. And we're going to get to that later with a video that we're going to watch too. But the mind is an important thing. What you think is an important thing. And we shouldn't diminish this. It's not the only thing, but actually, it's interesting, where I went to seminary, the tagline for the seminary, Asbury, is where head and heart go hand in hand. So they're kind of, I always thought that was kind of cool. It's like, okay, good. They're trying to kind of bring the head and the heart, because sometimes, certainly school can get kind of heady, and it's just all up here, because the heart is important. But at times, I think, especially in church, we focus on the heart and forget about the head. And I think it's important to keep those in balance as we approach our Christian lives. And this particular program that you guys are in has quite a bit of reading, has quite a bit I'm sure that with your mentors and stuff, there's heart issues that you're dealing with. In fact, we just sat and I stumbled upon a wonderful testimony here where you were testifying what God was doing in your heart. And that's great. But also this program is very much interested in how you think about things as well, and developing that. And so we'll get to some pointers about that here in a bit. Just one more verse that talks about the mind is Romans chapter 12, which says, "Don't conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind," says Paul. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. It's an interesting verse. Again, to contrast with what Paul doesn't say, he doesn't say, don't conform to the pattern of this world, be transformed by the renewing of your heart. Now, it wouldn't be wrong if he would have said that, probably, because our hearts do need to be transformed. Our lives are part of who we are as well. But it's important to note that here he says, in not conforming to the pattern of this world, we're transformed by the renewing of our minds. We think, and then we act. And oftentimes, the things that we do come out of patterns and thoughts and whatnot that happen here, very much in tune with the heart, which we'll get to in a little bit. But both of these are important. So I, you know, to preface what we're going to talk about here, this is a kind of a pendulum that I've probably been on my whole life, kind of swinging between, oh, come on. You know, it doesn't matter what you think about it. It matters what, you know, it's Jesus at work in your life. Or, you know, just, you know, don't let your head get in the way of what God wants to do or something. You know, you'll hear preachers saying things like that sometimes. And it's like, and I've been there before, but then I've also been in circles where I feel like it's all ideas and it's all concepts and it's all constructs in the head. And I think, man, let's just pray. You know, let's just bring this to Jesus. Let's just, you know, forget about the complexities of that all, and let's just focus on more of a simple childlike faith. So it's, we've got to be at a place where it's not either or, it's both and I think that I think that's going to be important for you guys if you're going to be able to, if you're going to get kind of everything out of this program that that is here for you. So a few tips. I just want to give a few tips. As far as I've actually been a teacher for, I don't know, over 20 years now probably. I first taught in a city called Şanlıurfa in southeastern Turkey. I taught English to elementary, middle school, high school. Like I was the token American native speaker, English native speaker, so they used me as a selling point for the private school that I taught at, and so they told all the parents that, you know, if you send your kid here, you're going to have a native speaker be their English teacher. So once they said that to the whole school, well, I had to be in every class in the school. So I taught everything from first grade through high school. Like my day was, and it was a mess. I wasn't able to keep that up for too long. I once I did it for a year, then I had more bargaining power, and I was able to negotiate a much more sane schedule, and I kept going. So I taught English in Turkey. Then when I moved back to Florida, I taught high school Bible there for probably about 5 or 6 years at Sarasota Christian School. I taught all their high school Bible classes, and then I moved from there to Rosedale in 2011, I guess it was, and have been teaching there ever since. So I've spent a lot of time sort of with students, around students, kind of talking with students, talking to students, yelling at students. No, I don't yell at my students anymore, although I may have yelled at some of my Turkish kids. It was, you had to be mean. Like, I realized early on when I was, especially with my middle school, my Turkish middle schoolers, like, I was way too nice to begin with. And then all of a sudden they thought they could just do anything they wanted to. And I noticed the Turkish teachers were all mean. They would yell. And so there were a couple times that after a day in class, I would think, I am so glad no one back home saw me today. Because they would, we sent Matt to Turkey, and that's what he became. But we got through it. I never hit anyone. So that's my one caveat. So just a few tips as far as you think about it. These are just kind of off the cuff, off the top of my head. Just as I've tried to be a lifelong learner as well, and as I've walked with people who've been trying to learn in both academic settings and classroom settings, just a few tips, and they're going to be, you know, pretty simple stuff, but you know, we'll keep it that way. The first one is when it comes to reading and engagement with ideas and whatnot, you need to find the way that works for you in engaging with different ideas. Sometimes I'll be sitting in a seminar, I'll be sitting somewhere, and I'll hear someone talk about, you know, how much they read, or what they read, or what they do, or how they study, or something like that. And I'll think, oh, that's how it's supposed to be done. And then I try it, and it just doesn't work. And it's like, it doesn't work for me. And so there's ways that you are going to get this material that work for you that doesn't work for the person next, maybe your mentor. It doesn't work for, maybe your mentor's talking to you about, here's what I do, and it just doesn't connect with you. That's okay. You need to find something that connects with you. One of the things I realized about myself is that I'm very much of a verbal processor. Like, I talk And half the time when I'm talking with someone about something, I might even be saying stuff that I don't even believe at all. But I'm just throwing it out there just because maybe that's right, and then we'll talk about it. And my wife is much more of an internal processor, and she'll wait before she talks, which is really wise. That's like a really good thing, but that's not how I am. And so I'll put something out there, and we kind of had to learn this whole, because when she wouldn't talk as quickly, I would take that as like, well, what's your problem? You know, what do you, you don't like, you know, whatever. But I realized that, you know, if I just let her process internally and then talk, what she said was really, really good. And I would have eventually got there after I talked about it for, you know, an hour. But I kind of need that back and forth in order to process things. And so that's become one of the ways that I engage with ideas and engage with people. One of the things that I did a number of years ago, I picked up I found a book by Richard Foster that was called, the title is 25 Books Every Christian Should Read. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. I wonder how many of these I've read. I consider myself a Christian, you know. I wonder, and I looked, and there were a whole bunch of really good books, but I don't think I had read any of them on the list. And I thought, well, that's a shame. I should do this, you know. And so I called a couple friends, and we started this book club. And we started working down through the list, and we would, you know, depending on how long the book was, it'd go 3-4 months, you know, and then we'd all try to read it and then get together. And I read some great books that I never would have read otherwise. You know, Confessions by St. Augustine, and The Brothers Karamazov, and just all these, you know, great classics that I never would have had the discipline or the, you know, whatever, to sit down and just read on my own. But when I had other people that I was talking about this stuff with and kind of engaging with, then all of a sudden, that's the way I learn. That's the way I do things. And so I think that's really important, is this kind of find ways of engaging that work for you. If it's reading, if you're more of an audible person, if you need to listen to stuff, there's lots of resources out there. Just listening to material, podcasts, blogs, all sorts of stuff. But find what works for you. And just because it works for someone else, or just because someone else really engaged with something in a certain way, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to hit you the same way. And that's okay. It's not like, well, I must be dumb because that person gets it and I don't get it. No, it doesn't mean you're dumb. It just means your way of coming about that is different than the other person's way of coming about that. So find out what works for you. Another thing is the importance of just listening, and why I got listening quotes there, because oftentimes it's not, you know, audibly hearing, but reading, and to a variety of different voices when it comes to various topics. I mean, it's easy to get siloed. It's easy to get to a place where you're only talking to and listening to people that agree with you. And when we find ourselves in a silo like that, it's important to get out. I remember this would happen to me all the time when I lived in Turkey. I'm this American, but I speak fluent Turkish, and so inevitably, when you get on a bus, and whoever you were sitting beside, I was like this oddity, and they wanted to talk because, what, you're an American, you speak English or Turkish? Oh, really? And then the next question almost all the time was, oh, so you must be a Muslim then. And talk about a great open door, you know, to sharing the gospel. Well, no, I'm not a Muslim, and let me tell you why. You know, but it was, you know, almost everyone you talked to had a very siloed worldview. It's like, well, they never talked to any Christians, so obviously all Christians didn't realize the fact that the Bible had been changed, that Muhammad had talked about the coming of, you know, or that Jesus had prophesied the coming of Muhammad, and they had this, you know, all these talking points that they would go down through, and every one of them is a wrong assumption about what I believed and things that I held dear. And so it was a great opportunity to just sort of sit down and, well, no, here's what I believe and why, and here's why what you're saying is not true, and here's why, you know, and it was, yeah, great conversations that you have. But it comes from they very much were in a siloed where they only ever talked to people who thought exactly the way they did. And we have the same, when I say they, I mean, I got to point at myself. We surround ourselves very often with people that think just exactly how we do. And it's great to have a discussion with someone who agrees with you on everything, because you can just sit there and affirm each other all day long. But it's not necessarily helpful. Just, you know, if you ever come up against an idea or something that you feel like, I just don't even understand how someone doesn't believe this or something, well, there's probably a lot of people who don't, and figure out why they don't. They might have some good reasons. I don't know. They may not. I'm not saying you need to buy everything that you, you know, hear or see or whatever, but it's, I think it's important to hear from a variety of voices. The third thing is, I just think it's so important to discipline yourself to read. And I say that as someone who, I wasn't always a reader. Like when I was a kid, I was the hardest one of my siblings to, I mean, my mom had to work much harder to get me to read than my siblings. They were much quicker to just sit down and read for hours, and it was so much harder for me. But reading, I think, is one of those things that that is just so important, and we really need to just discipline ourselves to do. Reading scripture, sure, but also reading other things, too. I just have a few sort of tips here that I don't have on the slide, but are kind of under this heading that I thought I'd pull out here to make sure I don't miss any of them. One is, again, this theme of find out what works best for you. Like, it's not, I don't know whether it's, what, maybe you're more of an audible person, you want to listen to stuff, that's great. There's great resources out there for listening to material. That can be something you do, but for me, Kindle has been amazing. I love Kindle. I'm not a Kindle spokesman or, you know, whatever, but it has totally transformed the way that I read. In fact, I'll often be sitting in church. Probably often is an overstatement, but probably 5 or 6 times. Well, it happened one of the last times I heard Steve preach. I'll hear the preacher mention a book in the sermon, and before the sermon's done, I will have bought it on Amazon and be reading it by the closing of the sermon. So you'll hear it, and it's like, oh, that sounds like a good book. You got your phone. Of course, you're listening still, I guess. And you find it, and you download it, and you're good to go. Like, I don't know. I'm a fan. You can take your books with you everywhere, but just find time, find ways that you can read. You're not going to connect with all writers. Some of the books that you're asked to read for this program, some of them you're really going to like and are going to be easier for you to read, and other ones you're not going to like. And you know, that's okay if you don't necessarily connect with some of them. That's okay. Again, that doesn't mean you're not smart or you're not. One very popular writer that I've always wished that I connected with, but that I just don't and haven't, and I every time I sit down, I always think I should really connect with this guy. I don't. It's a guy named Dallas Willard. Maybe you have to read some of his stuff. He writes a lot of sort of spiritual, like spiritual formation stuff, and I teach spiritual formation here at RBC, and so I always think, man, I really need to read Dallas Willard, because that's who everyone talks about. Dallas Willard this, Dallas Willard that, and I'll sit down and 2 pages in, I'm just like, I don't know, I don't connect with him. But that's okay. Like, not all the books that you're asked to read, you're going to connect with the author. That's all right. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. Just don't get bogged down. If you're reading and you feel like you're getting the gist of what the author is saying, it's okay to kind of skim. It's okay to, okay, I know what he's saying here. Get to the end of the chapter, read the concluding paragraph. If you know what they're getting at, that's great. That's fine. That's what it's all about. There was a book a number of years ago that everyone was passing around called You Are What You Love. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But James Smith, I think it was. Great book. Well, I think so. But that's because I only made it halfway through, and then I got tired of it, and then I felt like, okay, I got out of this what he's trying to say, so I just sort of let the rest go. You know, there's a lot of books that you know, could have probably been a blog post, but then they turned it into a book. And so they, you know, after you kind of get the gist of what the author's saying, it's okay. You know, the ideas are what's important. So don't be afraid to, you know, skip to the last paragraph. Maybe I shouldn't have covered the mic before I said that. But the important thing is the ideas. This is a really important thing. I'm flying through stuff here. Don't expect to agree with everything that you're reading at. I don't have this up here, but this is under the discipline yourself to read. When you are reading, I had a friend once who would get upset. He'd be reading a book, and he'd come to a part in the book where he didn't agree with what the author was saying, and he would just get mad and put the book down and be like, well, I'm done then. I don't agree with this. You know, when I read a book, I go into it with the mentality that I am not going to really agree with anything this guy's saying. And then if I agree with anything, that's bonus. It's like, so, you know, feel free, you know, back and forth. Even, and again, you got to be careful what you do with this. When you read the Bible, it's okay to have arguments with Scripture, too. It's okay to say, God, what in the world did you mean when you said this here? Like, don't expect to agree with everything that you read. It's good if you disagree with some of the stuff. And some authors, you'll agree with some of the stuff they say. And then, like, the book that I just talked about, You Are What You Love, the first couple of chapters, I just loved the gist of the author, what he was getting at. He got in chapters 3 and 4, and he took it in a direction I just didn't agree with. I was like, nah. I like how he started. I didn't like how he ended. And that's okay. It's not that he's wrong. It's not that I'm right. I could be wrong, and he's onto something that I may, 20 years from now, realize, oh, I guess I was stupid to disagree with him. But, you know, it's okay to disagree, I guess is what I'm saying. Don't take that as a sign of, well, I better put this book aside because I don't agree with this author. Nah, read it some more. You know, see what they're getting at. And it is okay to disagree. I flew through everything I was going to say. What time is it? It's quarter after. I had a video that is about 7-8 minutes long that I was going to show that talked about. Does it have to start at 7:15 or at 5:15 or is it flexible? Why don't we? So there's this. We'll watch the video and then I have a few things to say after that. Ways sort of dictates our movements, and you know. You've heard the saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, or, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and, you know, stuff like that. But actually, there is some truth to it, as, you know, his kid learned how to ride so much quicker than he did. But even he, you know, you actually can teach an old dog new tricks. The phrase there, the neural plasticity, you'll hear that phrase thrown around a lot of the way that our mind kind of is in some ways plastic. It can change. It can morph. It can be, and that's what I think Scripture is talking about when it talks about being transformed by the renewing of our minds. But you know what? It takes discipline. It takes time sitting down. It takes time reading. It takes time, you know, doing these things that they're not always maybe easy, but at the end of the day, we can see. We can see change, and anyway, I love that illustration of the backwards bicycle. We'll just end with this quote, which is really what we're after. So I came across this once, and it hit me that this applies so much to our walks with Christ and our desire to grow. If you want to build a ship, he says, don't drum up people to collect wood and don't assign them tasks and work, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. And you see what he's saying there. You know, you can hire people to, you know, get wood for you and teach them how to, but what's really going to get you a good ship is if people are enthralled with actually getting out on the water, and they're going to put their heart and soul into this thing. And I think spiritual formation and spiritual growth is, we sometimes shortchange it when we say, well, if you want to, you know, deepen your walk with Jesus, you need to, read at least 3 chapters of the Bible every day and, you know, journal this much and pray that much, and we kind of get these tasks. It becomes very task-oriented, when really what is going to drive us to a deeper walk with Christ is kind of a longing for the endless immensity of God and his love for us, or, you know, a relationship with him, and that's going to then drive the things that we do and the practices that we do. So you know, when you're in the middle of a hard book that you don't want to read, but shoot, this dumb program that I'm in wants me to read this book, you know, don't get discouraged. Don't get bogged down. Remember why you're doing it. Ultimately, the reason you're in this program is spiritual transformation, is a closer walk with Jesus. And in doing these different exercises and doing these different things, you know, we're getting our minds, our hearts.